Yep.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Can I Kick It FC. It's me, host as always, Elliot, and joining me is a man from the islands. Well, we're technically both from the islands. Shanier is just originally from the islands. It's me and Shanier.
How you doing?
I'm good, man. it always happens when I haven't recorded in a while that I always get caught up in the what intro I need to do, whether it's River City 93 or whether it's Can I Kick It or Walking 90. And all the intros are kind of the same because I haven't gotten to the point yet of making a new intro. So, yeah, I almost went with the River City 93 intro. That was going to be awkward.
yeah, that would have been a little weird, especially if it's coming from people who are nowhere near Richmond.
Yeah.
Listening to this, and they'd be like, wait, what?
Yeah, for real. That's very much the thing. And I look, it's been a while since we've done one of these, just because life. But we want y'all to know we are still dedicated to doing this podcast.
Yeah.
That we started in the middle of the pandemic. You know, I think recently we just celebrated 3 years.
Yeah.
Well, not recently. On Juneteenth 2023, we celebrated 3 years. And it's kind of cool to see that the project we've been doing is still coming around. We're still talking about Black history and soccer. And also to see all these other podcasts and publications pop up is also kind of cool.
Yeah, it's interesting because at first, before we started it, I don't think I noticed how much of a presence the Black community had in soccer, especially looking at the Black American community. I've always known, you know, Caribbean Black folks, we love soccer. Africans love soccer. But Black Americans, it's just been one of those things that where the fan base is hidden. The fan base is there, but it's hidden. And I think being able to do Can I Kick It has really opened my eyes to how many more people than just me or just the few Black people that I know who are into soccer, that it's more than just them, that it's more than just us. I'm loving it, you know? I love finding out about little niches of Black supporters groups and, you know, just soccer fans that are, it's like, I don't have to say, all right, well, I'm just going to have to find the Caribbean and African people and talk to them about soccer.
Yeah, no, that is dope. Like, you do have different aspects. And it's funny enough how, like, in Black soccer culture, like, there has to be, like, a stereotypical Black fan. You know, like, everyone thinks, like, the Black fan supports things. Supports the same way, and that's not any way how it is. Like, I think the most unique thing and thing that I love most about America is how different, you know, Black people in this country support soccer, whether it's in the West Coast, like they have their own style, South, they have their own style, Midwest has their own style, up North has their own style. Like, there's all these different styles of how to support. Where, like, for instance, like in Atlanta, it's very much like trap music, beats, like, but you go up north, it's a more mix of, like, it feels like New York. Like, it feels gritty, it feels rough. Or if you go to, like, DC, it's kind of like that mix of, like Mambo Sauce and Go-Go. Or you go out west, and it's like that Cali flair. When you go to Texas, it's a lot of like the chop and screw. Like, it's different variations of styles. That's awesome. That's not even what we're supposed to be talking about. But Yeah, I guess this is a cool way for us to talk about who we are supposed to be talking about today. Is Mr. Shaka Hislop. For those who don't know, Shaka is one of the pundits at ESPN FC. And recently, back in July, he had a... How would you describe it? Like a slight medical mishap?
Yeah, a very scary incident on live broadcast where he just collapsed in the middle of reporting live. I think it was at an AC Milan friendly at the Rose Bowl. Yeah. And I remember watching when I was watching it live, like I felt like my heart stopped when I saw him go down, and I just saw Tom just freaking out, just absolutely losing. Like I would say that's how you know whether someone is professional or not, because he tried to keep it together, but with the amount of time that they had been working together, you know they developed a friendship, and that most likely rattled him, seeing Shaka just go down like that. Yeah, I mean, it was scary, but he's okay. He recovered. It was very soon after that we got an actual video from him saying that he's okay. He's, you know, getting checked out, making sure that everything's okay. And haven't really heard anything about it after that, which I can understand is probably a private issue. That's his up to him and his family to know. It's kind of none of our business. But just knowing that he is okay, I personally think is everybody's business, especially after scaring everybody like that.
Right. It's kind of like, what's the old black saying? I got to put my eyes on you. I got to put my eyes on you. Yep. Make sure you do it. That's what it feels like. Because, like, honestly, like, I don't know about you, Shanae, but, like, Shaka was my introduction to soccer in this country. Like, his... Mm-hmm. I never... Let me not say that. Shaka was, like, one of the first black commentators that I've ever interacted with or saw on TV. I was like, oh, snap. Like, that might be us to talk about this game? You know? But he also, like... For him, Aaron West, there's a couple of others, like some of my name, but seeing a black commentator or someone that look like us talk about the game is so, it's two sides of the coin. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
because I mean, we're used to seeing, when we're seeing, you know, pundits for NBA, NFL, we're used to seeing black people commentating or broadcasting with regards to those sports. But it's just very few and far between within soccer. And yeah, hopefully it grows, because I think within the black community, soccer has grown in terms of black American kids playing the sport. It's actually grown a lot. It's grown along with the sport itself in this country, and I think we're going to see a lot more, especially when you look at the likes of Charlie Davies on CBS, making appearances on CBS every once in a while, Micah Richards, who's a staple, and of course Thierry Henry. Every once in a while, our good friend Kobe Jones popping up here and there on broadcast. Who else? There's been others.
Like I said, Aaron West, he's one.
Aaron West, Adu has shown up. I remember during the World Cup, he's part of the
Bradley Ray Phillips is one for doing MLS.
Yeah.
There's another guy. I can't think of, I can see his face, but I can't think of his name. He dresses really well. Like, he'd be on the Galasso show at MLS. Mm-hmm. He has a bald head. I know
that doesn't help much. That doesn't help much.
he's another one as well. But I want to ask you this question, Shanae. Like, it seems as if to be black in the commentary space, you have to be an ex-player. Like, it doesn't seem as if, like, it's very rare that you see people that are journalists that are Black being in those commentary space. Outside of, like, Aaron Lewis or George DeMatteis, you know, like, it's very rare.
Yeah. Yeah, it is rare. I mean, the only high profile person I can think of right now, but and again, that's not a Black American, is Abdo on CBS. She literally hosts that show, but she, again, she's British. which you see a lot more, especially if you look at if you, you know, you're able to catch glimpses of it on YouTube, maybe some British broadcasting of analyzing game, you see Black British commentators who are not ex players who are on there. But here in the US, in terms of seeing Black American either commentators, broadcasters, or pundits that are not ex players, it's very rare.
Yeah. It is. And yeah. I don't know if now we're talking about a space that is very, very predominantly white. Like, I don't think that shocks anyone that listens to these podcasts, because, like, they know. Yeah. These watchers are predominantly white. But it feels like that old adage of, and I'm pretty sure you heard your folks say it to you, like, you have to work twice as hard to get half of what they got. Right? And, like,
exactly. That's, like, yeah.
The constant thing is, if you're a Black child in America or a Black child in Britain or wherever, like, I'm pretty sure you heard your parents say that. And it's pretty much just the adage of, like, you have to overwork yourself to get half of where they at. Like, they already have the advantage, right? Because of their skin color or because of the circles that they're in that we're not predominantly in, and how that, like, is an uphill battle for us to get into these spaces, which are hard to get into. Because, like, we are in the media field, or we were in these media spots, we know it very often, like, we are going to be the only two Black people in that room. Like, me and you and Charles, the other Black supporter of River City 90, River City, has the same, like, we have a running joke between the three of us where we're like, all right, it's one Black guy here, it's two Black guys here, you know? Because we're trying to make those spaces comfortable.
Yeah, but I think it's even harder in soccer for Black Americans. Because I think if, for example, I was born and raised in, I don't know, West London or east side of Manchester or whatever, it would be very easy for me to, it would be easier for me to get, even if I didn't play professionally, as a journalist, to be able to get a position for BBC or Sky Sports, because the culture of the country is soccer. So a majority of the people already know about the sport. So you're expected to already know a lot. So you already have certain credentials naturally just by being born and raised here. The problem is, here in the United States, it's like, what are the most, what, for at least for our generation, and even for people that are slightly younger than us, the majority of people, the sports that were followed were basketball, football, baseball. And because of that, I mean, I remember growing up to the point where soccer even took a backseat to hockey. So, I mean, the NHL got more playtime on the evening news than the MLS did. And and so because of that, you're looking at, not only do I have to work a lot harder because of the color of my skin, I also have to work a lot harder because of the culture of the nation, the sports culture of the nation, and both the sports culture of the people that are around me, and the fact that I have to show credibility at a much higher level just to be seen, because it's expected that you're an American, you don't know enough about soccer. So on top of being Black, the fact that if you're an American, it's like, yeah, you're good luck finding any position in that realm when you have immigrants coming from England coming here into the U.S. to take those positions.
And even that, like, being black in those spaces, like, we have to prove that we're even knowledgeable about the game. Like, me and Shanae have both ran each other. We're at soccer games, and we have, like, I think it was when we first started covering River City 93, doing River City 93. And Shanae, I'm pretty sure you remember. And we went to this press event, and the guy, we had to prove to this guy that, like, we actually cover the team. Because he couldn't fathom, like, there's two black guys covering soccer. And we're like, wait, are you players? Like, no, we cover the team. Like, I'm 5'9", 300 plus. Shanir is like 6'2", skinny as a twig. And the guy literally was like, hey, are y'all players? Like, no, we cover the team. Like, we're here to do our job. Like, but it just goes into that thing of where, like, the stereotypes in this whole area of media coverage in this country, or even getting access to the game, are starting to break down. Like, 5 years ago, and we've always had it, like, it felt like it was a black soccer boom. Like, I would say right around, well, not even 5 years ago. Well, yeah, about 5 years ago, around 2019.
Yeah.
There was a black
soccer after, boom. I think after the 2018 World Cup, there was a...
It felt like it.
Yeah.
It felt like there was just an explosion of, like, independent black media podcasts, black writers, photographers. Like, you, and the thing about it is, like, you have black voices in women's soccer, college soccer, men's soccer, photography, artistic styles, capos, like all these different things, and you can see it's slowly starting to show the fruits of the benefits, you know, it's a slightly way out. The crazy thing is, this is not what we were supposed to be talking about, but it's just so happened that I think this is kind of like a cooler episode where we're like, you're seeing, I think me and Shanae are both seeing in the 5 years since we've been doing this, like, the black soccer boom is something that's on the horizon and is really going to take off.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think there's any turning back, because I think, and I always used to think when I was younger, I always wondered, why are there not more black people involved in soccer? Because the energy, the vibe that soccer has, is so us. Why are we not biting onto this? It always used to just make me feel like, why are we not biting onto this? And I think it was just the hanging on to the past of how people in this country used to, you know,
view soccer, but then also like soccer. The access to the sport. Like, we talked about this before, like, the access to the sport is absurd. Like, I think we're the only country that views soccer as if, like, if you pay out this amount, you get access to soccer, right? Whereas, like, outside of maybe, for real, soccer is probably the most accessible sport in the world. Everywhere else.
It, like, is.
Grassroots, everything. But,
yeah,
like, for someone who works in public schools, I can tell you, like, soccer is, like, the bottom tier thing. Like, it's football, basketball, baseball. Like, it's those sports that kids want to go to and play first, because that's what they see people like them look like, and they don't see us in soccer. But also in terms of that, it's like the amount of money that goes into it, from getting kids access to it at an early age, to pay for play, to other things, where for everyone in America is already difficult. Like, another thing, for what, for instance, like, getting your coaching badges, like, that's a difficult thing to do here, because, like, to get, like, I think it's the A license, like, you got to take a trip from here all the way, I think, like, Kansas City, and pay like four G's. You're talking about hotel room, food, taking all time from work. Like, that alone is already crazy. But if you're African American, or if you're my fault, a Caribbean American, looking to get into the sport, it makes that ladder so much more harder now to go climb, because you got to find, like, the access to it just isn't there in other areas. I hope that makes sense, but like,
it makes sense. But one thing that I do realize is, because of this big soccer boom, it for those of you that are listening that are involved in youth coaching, this is the time to jump in, because soccer is growing so much right now that a lot of these MLS clubs, USL clubs, are trying to get into the inner city. And the best way to get into the inner cities is make sure they have faces that look like the people they are trying to get into, that are they are trying to the talent pool that they're trying to tap into. I mean, I remember hearing about, and I don't know how far along they've gotten with it, but the futsal program here in the Richmond area, Futsal RVA, a while back, were trying to get into inner cities, trying to find abandoned basketball courts that they could transform into street soccer courts. And so this is the time for us to put our faces in the coaching game, in order to be the role models, to be that beacon on the hill for a lot of these kids who may think, oh, well, I live in the inner city, so I'm not going to be able to really get into that. That's suburb. That's a suburb sport, you know? And it's becoming less and less of that. You're seeing it in New York. You're seeing it in D.C. You're seeing it in L.A. A lot of these abandoned basketball courts are being turned into street soccer courts. And it's growing, and you and we already know what New York did for the NBA for basketball, with basically New York being the mecca of street basketball. there is that possibility for soccer, and we see what it did for France. I mean, they won 2018 World Cup. A lot of that came from a lot of the players on that squad grew up playing street soccer. So
I mean, you even seeing it now with the England squad, like, a lot of those kids grow up playing street soccer. So who knows? Yeah. Like we said, we're at the boom of it. We're not in the end years of it. So this is the early stages of it. So for anyone listening to this podcast, if you want to help out, trust me, there is support out there. Get up with your local club. It doesn't have to be MLS. It can be USL. It can be NPSL. It can be NISA. Even like a local like pub squad. You know, put your face out there, be supportive, be helpful. Try to push the game in different communities, and you never know who will latch on and grow to. Because, be honest with you, I'm surely one of those people. So I'm always down for helping people to fall in love with the sport. Like, my saying is, like, it's not my job to help you love the sport. It's my job to help create a lane for you to find your love for the sport.
Yeah. You know?
So that's my thing. I guess this is where we should probably stop here and stop before we carry on too much. But yeah, listeners, I know it's been a while since we've done an episode, but trust not, fear not, fear not. We're gonna be back. We finally settled down. Things have calmed down in our lives. I am almost done with grad school. Shaneer is still out in the country. So for 10 cents a day.
Yeah.
With the Wi-Fi connection. like we always say. But man, Shaneer, it's great to do one of these with you, man. I think this was like a great episode to get back into. Because we were supposed to be talking about Shaka and what happened with the diagnosis and his career. But I think using Shaka as a vehicle to talk about the black soccer boom and everything connected to it, I think was awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, one thing I just want to talk about before we go into more so his, you know, his history is that I know most people are not familiar with it, but he is not just, you know, Shaka Islup. His full name is Neil Shaka Islup.
Oh, that's right.
And the CM stands for Chaconian metal. Yeah. So as a citizen of Trinidad and Tobago, he has a Chaconia medal, which is the second highest state decoration in TNT.
Is that like a war hero?
I think this. No, it's basically has to do with promoting like national welfare and community spirit. I think this goes with what he's done for the, you know, for how he's represented Trinidad for, you know, in soccer as Trinidad's goalkeeper for 7 years.
Yeah. So yeah. So even before I was about to end the episode, Shanir brings something more that now we know. The more you know. So. With that being said, listeners, I'm going to stop rambling, and we will holler at you guys next time. Be easy, be safe as always. Peace.